Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now, with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help get your job the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/arts. Just go to Indeed.com/arts right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/arts. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
When you think boots, you think Ariat. You think comfort from day one and durability to day 1,000. You think steel toes on the job, square toes on the dance floor, with style that owns a Saturday night and still looks sharp enough for Sunday dinner. And through every mile and every moment, you're thinking Ariat boots. Boots that show up, stand out, turn bad ideas into better stories, and still punch the clock come Monday morning. Now, it's time to stop thinking and start shopping. Find your Ariat boots at Ariat.com or a retailer near you.
Everyone has their own unique views and needs when it comes to financial success. If you'd like to leave your financial woes behind and live a life of financial freedom, you've come to the right place. Welcome to the Saving with Steve Show, hosted by Steve Sexton. The show will help you with the ins and outs of money. We talk about financial issues that could be costing you thousands of dollars and keeping you up at night. We talk about money, tax reduction, saving more, spending less, 401ks, risk management, retirement, and everything under the sun that relates to you having a healthier, happy relationship with money. Now, here is your host of Saving with Steve, Steve Sexton, on UK Health Radio.
Hey, welcome to the Saving with Steve show, where we talk about the ins and outs of money, pretty much everything under the sun relates to you having a happier, healthier relationship with money. My name is Steve Sexton. I want to thank you for joining us. Hey, we just exceeded 1 million listeners, so I want to thank you all for sharing us with your friends and family. And you know what? We're going to give you some wonderful information today. One of the interesting things with all the stuff that's been going on economically, today we're focusing on something that is important to all of us, whether you're working or not. That's your 401k basics. We're going to be talking about common blind spots, Roth conversions, you know, how to think about it. Is it the right time, wrong time? The other thing that's important is stress testing a retirement plan. And I think one of the big things about that is too many people leap before they really stress test to see if it makes sense. And one of the big things that we're going to start with once we get going with our guest is, you know what, many people over 50 overestimate the value of savings and underestimate the value of a strategy. Now, to help us out with all this, we have Dr. Stephen Scheib. He's a PhD, certified financial analyst, certified financial planner, is a finance professor at Wake Forest University. He's the founder of Schaller. Finance advising, a fiduciary service with clients in 39 states. The mission is to educate, empower, encourage to help individuals gain clarity and confidence around personal finances. Stefan, welcome to the show. Thank you for being here. So many people are looking forward to this, so I just want to say appreciate you.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm happy to be here. Excited to jump into it. Lots of good stuff to discuss when it comes to the strategy side and the 401k side of things.
Perfect. But before we get into that, all of our listeners love to know, why'd you get into the business you're in? I mean, quite frankly, if you look at it, you're a PhD, a CFA, which I know is very, very significant in the finance industry, and a certified financial planner. So you've got a lot of education. So what prompted you to get that education, get into this business?
Yeah. It's been a long road, lots of different credentials and time that's gone into it. I think I've always been fascinated with finance. I've loved finance for so long. And the first step was really the PhD. Went to grad school, started to really dive into the inner workings of finance, how it works, where the theory came from, where the original papers that establish a lot of the common rules that we see today came from somewhere. So mm-hmm. being jump into those. And what really shifted for me was I had the experience out in grad school of someone trying to pitch me whole life insurance as a grad student. And mm-hmm. we went through this whole process. I couldn't believe, because my research at the time was all on conflicts of interest and executive compensation structures for companies. So I was completely immersed in this whole world and ended up digging into this a little bit further, finding out that this person didn't have to disclose at all how much he was going to make on any of these insurance contracts and the annuities and everything. And that sent me down a whole new rabbit hole of the conflicts of interest of investment advisors, and ended up teaching at the University of New Hampshire, wrote a few papers on fee structures of advisors, conflicts of interest, did some work with the state of Massachusetts, or the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, on rules and disclosures around helping people understand how much their advisor was charging them for financial advice, and had the unfortunate pleasure of keynoting one of their advisor events, where my job was to go and justify why it was good that clients knew how much they were being charged by their financial advisor. And after that, decided it was time to start a firm, and very different than kind of the common ways to run an advisory firm. We decided not to charge any assets or management fees. We don't manage any money. We don't have any commission products. It's pure pay for advice, just like you would go to an attorney or an accountant for advice. And it's been so much fun. It's great because talking to our clients, they are educated. They're interested in topics like we're going to be talking about today. What are the strategy components? What goes into making a decision around conversions, or how much they can contribute to accounts and all that? So this big wave of DIY investors that is built up, but a lot of times they're not looking for someone to manage the money, as it is someone to just tell them what buttons to push, right? And what they should be thinking about, or validate the plans that they've had. So it's been so much fun that we continue to grow. We work with clients all over the country, and I love it. It's been fantastic.
I know a number of people who are engineers and doctors and accountants and people like that, and they love doing it themselves, but they love finding out everything they can.
Yes.
More importantly, they love somebody else doing all the analysis for them.
Well, that's the thing, right? It's going, there's so much of this is that there's not a one size fits all approach to anything, right? In finance.
Everybody's different. I totally get that.
What's great about it is, what's the more interesting component of that is really seeing what are the levers that you pull and how that impacts the plan. So a lot of times when we're giving advice, it's not as much us dictating, this is exactly what you have to do, as much as this is what we think you should do. But here's what it looks like if you did that conversion up to the 24% bracket. And here's what it looks like if you contributed to Roth opposed to traditional. So that way they end up having that information to still make the call themselves, what they're going to do. But have a more educated decision on knowing what those impacts are going to be on other aspects of their finances.
Yeah. And then there's the big thing that why everybody's different. It's because it's their lens.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. It's their tax situation, their finance situation. Everybody's different. So that's very, very interesting. So one of the things that I'd like to start with is the question of, many people over 50 overestimate the value of savings more than underestimate the power of a strategy. So help us understand that. What does that mean? What does that mean to people? What should people be thinking?
Yeah, I think the difference is that what ends up happening is once you get over 50, you hit this inflection point with your finances. And this is something that I don't think people really see, to your point of when you're 25, 30, and you're saving into your accounts for retirement, you are doing all the work, right? You should ignore whatever the market's doing at that point, because it's irrelevant. The market could have the best year ever, and the $10,000 you threw in there is going to mean more to your account that year than any market movement that's going on. So you end up having the shift of, if you think about your portfolio growth as two components, one, how much you're adding in, and then how much the market is adding in. Mm-hmm. First, start off, it's all savings. The difference between getting from 25 to 45 in from a success perspective is mostly the savings component. It's, you've got to brute force that account up. What ends up happening though is you end up hitting the other side of that compound interest curve, where now you run into this issue of, my contributions are starting to matter less and less. And what's starting to matter more is the type of allocation that I'm in. Tax efficiency comes in. So maybe I shouldn't have the same allocation in my 401k as I have in my brokerage account, as I have in my Roth, because all of them are going to be taxed differently in the future. And it's going to impact my ability to do Roth conversions, or my ability to retire early, or my ability to withdraw from these accounts in the future from a liquidity perspective. So that's what starts to shift after 50, is you start looking at that timeline and saying, when is retirement in your mind? right? Because if your retirement is, if you're 50 and your retirement is 65, that's a lot different than you being 50 and saying, you know, I might want to retire in the next 5-7 years. Because we have to worry about, what if the market drops in the next couple of years? If the market drops, you're 50 and you're not retiring until 65, it's not going to be as big of a deal. If the market drops and you're 50 and you want to retire at 55, big deal, right? We need to make sure there's liquidity there. We need to make sure that you're taking into account things like health insurance costs before 65 and where that income is going to come from. Are you going to get ACA credits? Are you going to be able to afford private insurance during that time? At that point, it really does shift the way you think about retirement and say, we've done the savings component. There was no worrying about retirement. I talked to someone who's 35 or 40 and they're talking about retirement strategy. And the goal for them should be, focus on save. We just got to, you have to brute force those accounts up. When we get into 50, 55, and 60, that conversation, the brute forcing saving, it's still going to save. But what becomes more important is the strategy that you're talking about. That's why, because your account now is kind of outside of your control to an extent, right? It's growing whether you want it to or not. So we have to make sure it's growing in the right places, mostly from a tax concern.
Mm-hmm. So basically what you're saying is you're now focusing on the strategy of creating an income tax reduction, making sure I preserve this for my next portion of my life, so to speak, because essentially I'm going to be unemployed, so I don't have a paycheck and I have to create it on my own. The other big thing is when we look at taxation is the lower the taxes are, the more you keep. So trying to just grow it doesn't always make the most sense, even though you still want to do that. So you just really need to take a look at all those things. And then obviously you have things like life expectancy involved there. So if your whole family lives till 95 to 100, it's a different story. And if your whole family lives till 65 and you're 60, it's a big difference too. I mean, that's kind of compressing a little bit, but those are the things that people really, really, really want to be taking a look at. Okay. I want to talk about more of this stuff with Stefan Scheib, CFP, Certified Financial Analyst, PhD, finance. He operates, with clients that are all over the country in 39 states. But now we're talking about 401ks. So let's get into the 401k basics, and then let's talk about the common blind spots that people just don't see and that could possibly hurt them, and you know how they should be looking at it. So Steve, let's go with the 401k basics. I know this for a PhD and a CFA and a CFP, it's probably pretty basic, but there's a lot of people out there that have had 401ks for decades that don't really know how they truly work.
Yeah, I'm happy to jump into it. It's such a huge component of a financial plan because for many people, it's a major aspect of their savings, right? This is the main savings vehicle that they'll have. So the basics of it, and we can get into the weeds, so to speak, of where some of the missteps typically are. So the 401k is going to allow you and usually your employer to contribute toward your retirement. And there's limits associated with that. It'd be $23,000 a year and more if you're over 50. You get a little bit of a catch up there, a little bonus that you're going to be dealing with. And you're going to be in control of the investments for that 401k. And this was sort of a replacement for the pension system before. So generations ago, we talked more about having pensions associated for retirement where the employer took all the risk that they had to invest for all their employees for the retirement. 401k system was the replacement to say, hey, we need to move some of this risk off of the company and onto the employee themselves. So they are now controlling how their financial future is going to look and will help them maybe with a match or anything there. The issues we typically run into is just a misunderstanding around how those, even the basics work. I don't know how many times I hear, I can't do a Roth contribution to my 401k because I make too much. Right? And there's a huge difference there between a Roth IRA and a Roth 401k. A Roth IRA, you absolutely have limits on income, but a Roth 401k, there are no limits on an income perspective. So that becomes a major factor. And sometimes that solves the Roth conversion problems that people have of just knowing, hey, I could have been contributing to Roth this whole time, or I wish I would have known that earlier. From a basic, you really want, going back to our conversation around strategy, you can't take the understanding that your employer has your back in the sense of your employer is not managing these investments. And that is, you have now the control over your investments. They got rid of that when they got rid of the pensions. So it's your job to go in and make sure that the allocations that you're choosing, the funds you're choosing, make sense for your future. And I'd say the fees are the big one there. There's all of these are going to have fees associated with them, expense ratios that are associated with them. The days of 1-2% fees have really gone away. They're still there. You have to watch out for them. So I'm not saying they've gone away completely. They've gone away in the sense of usually you can find some lower cost funds that are going to be included in the 401k as good options for you. Mm-hmm. So that's going to be one area. making sure you're taking care of the match. Instead, if your employer is matching up to 6%, just because they're matching up to 6% or 4% or whatever it is, doesn't mean that that's your max that you should be going into. You really should be, I mean, good rules of thumb are somewhere between 10 to 20% savings is what should be going into a 401k. So if your employer is matching your first 3% and you're throwing in 3%, you're not there. You're not even halfway there to even somewhere in the middle of where you'd want to be. So, and a good secret to that one is generally, if you can go, and even if you have to start and say, well, that sounds crazy, right? I can't go from the 3% or 4% that I'm putting in and go up to 12%. That's going to be way too big of a jump. Then do this incrementally, right? Every year you go in and move it up 1%. Anyone can look at their budget and say, I could live on 1% less this year. Right? That's a lot easier to deal with than take a huge jump. And then anytime you get a bonus, right? Anytime you get a raise, to go in and take that raise and cut the raise in half. You get a 2%, 3% raise, and go ahead and allocate 1% or 2% of that to you personally, and another 1 or 2% to that 401k to really build you up to that level that you're shooting for.
Okay, so I have a couple viewers ask the question because they want to understand, like we talked about a Roth 401k, a regular 401k. What about a non-deductible 401k? How does that work and how much can you contribute?
Yeah, so that's a big one. So this is the grail allocation that you can get, right? If you can have a 401k that allows you to do both Roth contributions to your 401k up to the 23,000 and allows non-deductible after-tax contributions to the account, this is the holy grail. This is the one you want. Right. And if you don't have it, it's a great opportunity to ask an employer to see if they can offer for you, because it really doesn't affect the employer too much. Right? It's not, doesn't mean that they're adding more to it. What this is going to do is the limit is $69,000 that you can add to a 401k a year that includes both employer and employee contributions. Right? So if you put in your $23,000, maybe your employer is throwing in $10,000 or $5,000 to it, maybe they get you to 30. Well, there's $39,000 there as a gap that you legally have access to only if your plan allows you to make after-tax non-Roth contributions. And I'm glad you brought this up, because this is a common misconception. Even when people call in, we have clients who call, you know, their broker or their custodian, whoever they're using for the 401k. They said, no, they said I can make after-tax contributions, when really the person on the other end thinks they mean Roth contributions, right? Mm-hmm. These are completely different. These are non-Roth after-tax contributions. Now, what'll happen is you can add those to the account up to that $69,000. So now we're putting $39,000 extra into this 401k. And any growth that happens, though, is going to be taxed or tax deferred, right? So there's no tax benefit up front of doing this. So a lot of people say, well, what's the point, right? Why am I going to throw that money in there when I can put it in my brokerage account? The point is usually these plans are set up in a way where you can do an in-plan Roth conversion, which means you can go take this $39,000 that you just threw in the account that you've already paid tax on, and then immediately convert that money to Roth within the 401k. It's known as a mega backdoor Roth contribution. Everybody had a great name for it. And you pull
mega backdoor.
And now you have, you know, thousands of dollars, over $50,000 that you've been able to contribute to Roth throughout the year. And that is unheard of. I mean, so many people focus on, you know, I'm going to put $7,000 into a Roth IRA on the year. I'm going to do a backdoor Roth or something like that to get $7,000, when they miss out completely on the fact that they may be able to do $50,000, $60,000 into a Roth using the after-tax contributions. Now, the mistake that will come up, though, and we've seen this happen, is people will go and contribute to their after-tax contribution in their 401k and not convert it. And let's say I've had this happen where we've had clients go through and say, you know, for the past 10 years, I've been maxing out my 401k and adding all the max after-tax contributions I can do. So they'll go and add $30,000 a year for 10 years. So now they've had $300,000 of contributions, plus market's been good. That money's doubled over that time. So now they have $600,000 in after-tax. When they go to convert that over to Roth, that $300,000 in earnings is all taxable now. If they would have just gone and every year made their $30,000 contribution and then converted it over, then all of that growth would have been tax-free. It would have been in a Roth. I mean, that's a major misstep that is super easy to make, because you look and say, well, I'm going to contribute this much to after tax, so I'm good. And they forget the conversion part. And in that case, that mistake costs hundreds of thousands of dollars in tax.
Okay, I have another question. This is a few people. They were want to know if there's an out. I don't think there is, but here's what's happened. They actually funded for a number of years the non-deductible 401k.
Yep.
They stopped for 4 or 5 years because they didn't think they needed to, because they're paying off debt and all that before they wanted to retire. And now what they have done is they've rolled everything over, the non-deductible 401k and the regular 401k, into an IRA. Are they stuck? Are they paying taxes twice on money they already paid taxes on? Or is there a way to roll it back out? Or...
Yeah, that's a great question. So usually the deductibility of IRAs is on the owner of the IRA to track, right? So it is, they would have an argument to make, and this is definitely more in the CPA realm than my realm, getting in that gray area. But I think there is, and the reason I say that, I can give you some background of why I would say there may be an out there, because if you have a traditional IRA that includes deductible and non-deductible contributions, what I have seen done before is people will roll the tax deferred as portion of their IRA into a 401k and then convert the non-deductible portion over to Roth to clear out their IRAs to get around what's known as a pro rata rule for Roths. So because it works that way, I imagine, and again, this is a little bit more on the tax side than...
No, I'm with you.
I think it's a worthwhile conversation to have with a CPA to say, could we go and say, I have now, let's say $500,000 in a rollover IRA and $300,000 of that I've had is non-deductible. Could I go and convert all of this and take into account the fact that there's a non-deductible portion? That sounds right to me as an option. I definitely know that you'd be able to roll over the deductible portion back into another 401k if you want to. I wouldn't rule it out completely. I think that
I just had to ask. And then one of the last questions before we take a quick break here is, as long as you're working, let's say you're 85 and you've got a 401k and you're still working there and all your money's sitting in the 401k, do you have to take a required minimum distribution?
There's a lot to unpack there on that one. As long as you're still working, I don't think that's going to matter. And we're assuming it's in the 401k still.
Yes, all in the 401k.
So, exactly. So as long as it's still in the 401k, I think you'd be all right. Right? When you start pulling out of that 401k, you start to lose protections that are there.
Okay. I just want to make sure. Hey, folks, stick with us. This is great information from Stefan. We'll be right back with more Saving with Steve and Stefan Scheib.
More expert advice for having a happier relationship with money still to come on the Saving with Steve show on UK Health Radio.
The station that makes you feel good.
When you think work, you think boots. You think boots, you think Ariat. You think grit, concrete, rain, and heat, and boots that never back down from any of it. You think comfort and durability that hold up on the job, off the clock, and every step in between. Because the day doesn't end when the job does. And from overtime to off-duty, you're thinking Ariat boots. Boots that show up, stand out, and always back you up. Now, it's time to stop thinking and start shopping. Find yours at Ariat.com or a retailer near you. We know what you're thinking. I just want jeans that look great, feel great, and hold up. At Ariat, we've been doing some thinking too. We're thinking about fit that moves with you, no matter where the ride takes you. Durability that stands up to hard work, harder play, and comfort that never quits. And all this thinking, it's really just about more living. Now, it's time to stop thinking and start shopping. Find your Ariat jeans at Ariat.com or a retailer near you.
The station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back to the show that is here to help you achieve your financial goals. It's the Saving with Steve show. Now here's your host, Steve Sexton, on UK Health Radio.
Hey, welcome back to the Saving with Steve show, where we talk about the ins and outs of money. We're just going to get right to it. We have Stefan Scheib. We are talking right now about Roth conversions, Roth conversion timing. Is it right for everybody? Does it make sense? What should people be looking at? So, Stefan, could you just talk to us about what a Roth conversion is? What should we be looking at? The timing issue, because nothing's right for everybody. And then we can go from there.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, there's so much to jump into. I think the real basics, real basic on the Roth conversion side, and we can get into the nuance of it, because it is probably one of the more complicated areas of a personal financial plan. That the actual process is not complicated. It's actually really easy, and we'll talk about, but it is so tailored to every individual circumstance. And I think that's what throws a lot of confusion out there, because it is something that requires a little bit more strategy to it. The idea of a Roth conversion is that when you go and add money to a traditional 401k or traditional IRA and choose a tax-deferred option, you're making a deal with the government. Right? You make a deal with the government that says, I won't pay the tax now, but I promise in the future, I'm going to pay tax on this. And the hope is that you drop into a low tax bracket later on, right, in retirement, and you'll be able to pay lower taxes. That's the pitch that's given. That's the deal you make with the government. The government will always take your money sooner rather than later if you're willing to do so, right? So if you ever want to convert your money from traditional IRA or 401k over to a Roth, then you can just move money from your traditional IRA. Say, I want to move 100 grand from over here, and I'm going to put 100 grand over in my Roth IRA. And the government says, that's completely fine. You just have to pay us the tax that you promised you'd pay us in the future, right, on that conversion. And where that becomes kind of a mess from a strategy perspective is, and you immediately can see this, is, well, what tax bracket does that $100,000 conversion that I just did push me into? And that's all where the strategy starts to come in and saying, how do we structure these types of conversions so that way you can move money from tax deferred over to tax free through a Roth when you're at low tax brackets? So could you retire a little earlier? You have zero income that year. Maybe you live off some cash that you had in your emergency fund, or live off cash that you have on the side. Your income is nothing, but you go convert $150,000 from tax deferred to Roth, gladly paying, you know, 10, 12% on that money, as opposed to waiting until later in your 70s when you're forced to take the distributions. And this is why, to your point, Stephen, this is why I think that there's so much activity around marketing and everything around Roth conversions right now, because I know you hear it, I hear it. And if everyone's worried about, I get all these pitches and free steak dinners telling me about my Roth conversions that I can do. And it's all the same stuff, right? It's all the same pitch. And you can save hundreds of thousands of dollars. And it's not necessarily wrong, but it is starting to become, I think, on the forefront of people's minds, because they're getting into a point of RMDs. They're starting to hear friends hit RMDs. They're starting to get hit with RMDs. There's this ticking time bomb that goes off in your 70s. And basically, going back to this concept of the government says you're allowed to defer that tax until later. Well, it's not an indefinite deferral, right? What's going to happen is you get into your 70s and there's going to be a time where you have to hit required minimum distributions, or RMDs. Right now, it varies, similar to Social Security, but say 75 is what it's converged to. And at 75, the government looks at their watch and says, hey, you promised that you were going to start taking distributions out of these accounts. That's why we gave you the tax break. Now we're going to start forcing you to start taking these distributions. That's what scares a lot of people, as it should, because now you're forced to take distributions from these accounts over a compressed period of time, because you're using the IRS actuarial tables, and it's going to push you up into these higher tax breaks. It's not uncommon. We see it all the time where someone has gone their entire life in a, let's say, a 24% tax bracket, and then now R&Ds kick in and they're at a 35% tax bracket or 32% tax bracket, because all of their savings is tax deferred and taxable, and they've just been living off of the taxable brokerage account, and they've got this large account that is going to be affected by RMDs. So Roth conversions can help with that, because Roth IRAs are not subject to the RMDs. Why would they be? They've already been taxed. Mm-hmm. So when you retire, you start looking at, you really want to take advantage of low income years and say, I'm in a low bracket. Instead of being super excited about the low bracket, you look at it and say, I'm a low bracket. I'm going to take advantage of this by converting some of this money over, so that way I'm reducing that tax deferred bucket that's out in the future, moving more of that to Roth, and subsequently reducing my R&Ds that I'm going to be faced with.
Now, so for example, many people are asking about their earnings Medicare tax, IRMA, and how there's an additional cost that plays into that if you're doing that conversion. And how should people be looking at that as related to the cost, you know, your taxes and stuff like that, when it comes to a Roth conversion?
Yeah, there's really two areas. And you're hitting the spots of why this starts to make people nervous around and the need for this. Goes back to the very beginning of why we need a strategy, because you hit retirement. And before retirement, you're saving. You just have to worry about 401ks are the only types of acronyms you have to know. You go to retirement planning and you start getting thrown this like alphabet soup of IRMA, RMDs, FRAs, and QCDs, and all these things start being thrown. You're like, what is going on? That is true. So when you make these Roth conversions, you're going to increase your income. income. And there's penalties for having higher income outside of just taxes. You have IRMA, which is an additional Medicare tax that gets thrown on. You have issues related to Social Security taxation, all of these factors. So when you think about Roth conversions, that's really where it's important to start mapping all this out. So, I mean, we're, to put this in perspective, when we're trying to make those types of decisions, we're going in and estimating what we think tax rates would be every single year for someone's entire life, as odd as that sounds. So we can look forward and say, you know, this is where we think you might be on a tax perspective. Mm-hmm. So we can work backwards and say, you know what, that IRMA that you're going to pay now, it's probably worth it because you're going to save, you know, $60,000 in tax from a Roth conversion. I'd say the other side of that, the interesting side that we've seen is people who are retiring before 65, depending on what the mix of assets look like, sometimes it doesn't make sense at all to do Roth conversions because you keep your income low and you have ACA credits and everything that can be used to offset the medical costs that you're going to be dealing with. That one has been common over the past few years as an option, but you have to have the right mix of cash you can spend with lower income.
So what you're really saying is, you know what, it might not make sense for you to do Roth conversion because you're actually going to be in a lower tax bracket just by taking your RMDs. And you'll be better off just by doing that for the rest of your life as opposed to doing that conversion because there's no real benefit from a financial standpoint or a tax standpoint.
Absolutely, it could, right? It really depends on what tax bracket you're going to end up falling into at that point, especially if you're already looking at RMDs. So it ends up being harder to justify a large Roth conversion at that point because you're already being pushed up into a bracket. So now you're going to be pushed up even higher. That's where it becomes risky. The other situation to take into account, though, is if you're in that situation where RMDs are a pain for you, what that normally means is you likely had assets outside of your IRAs that you could use. Mm-hmm. Right? If you're solely using your 401k or your IRA for income, then the RMDs aren't really going to be impacting you very much because you're still going to need a distribution anyways from that IRA to live off of. But I think it's kind of to your point, you're going to be using it anyways. Where I see the most pain with RMDs is when someone doesn't need it. You know, like I have money in other accounts. I have Social Security payments. I have a pension. I have inheritance. I have all this. I don't need my IRA money, but now I'm forced to take this RMD. So what they don't take into account, though, is that that doesn't stop at your generation. In fact, it gets worse for the next generation. Mm-hmm. RMDs are not only your problem, your kid's problem, too, because when you inherit an IRA, you have to now take required minimum distribution. You have to drain that account over 10 years. So it's an even more compressed timeline. And when do you typically inherit? You typically inherit in your highest earnings years. So you're already in a high bracket now. And now you've inherited an IRA with a large RMD, and that money is being depleted quickly in tax. So you almost have to take a step back and say, you're not only looking at the tax implications of your finances, but also the tax implications of your family finances as well. In other words, you start looking less at the use of money for you now, but more the longevity of your money through time, through generations.
I think this is wonderful you say that because one of the notes from one of our viewers was, I just inherited a $3.5 million IRA.
Yep.
And my returns are about 10% a year. So I'm going to have to take out about $375,000 to $400,000 a year to completely deplete this over the next 10 years. And because of my income, my pension and everything else, I'll lose half of it to taxes.
You got it. Yeah.
And
those are weird situations because then you start looking at it like, should you just retire? You're almost forced to take a sabbatical just so you could drop into a lower bracket and keep more of the money.
Yeah, that. And what was really interesting is, you know, the timing's not always right for everybody. But one, I think the questions that people might want to ask themselves is, how do I want this to transition off to the kids I love? Because the reality is you have to take it out over 10 years, but it's tax-free for 10 years. Yeah. You can do a lot to building something up and then take it all out and it's tax-free. And that there's, wow, I love that. But you know what? You also have people who like are 75 that have life expectancy and might get them to 90 and they can, you know, does it make sense to start looking at that for people?
It may, right? Especially depending on what those RMDs are. And I think another way to think about that to that point. So 75, you're considering Roth conversions. You already have RMDs. Basically, should you do some bonus Roth conversions on top of the RMDs during that time? One question that I would say to ask is, what do you feel tax rates are going to be in the future? I think it's really easy for us to look and say, well, I'm in a 12% bracket now. So I think I'll stay in a 12% bracket in that situation, or I'm in 24, I'm going to stay in 24. The assumption there is that tax brackets in general are going to stay the same over the next 10 to 20 years. And I see that commonly where somebody says, especially younger clients, they'll look at it and say, you know, I'm in my 40s, 50s, I'm in this bracket, so I'm going to be in a lower bracket when I retire. And we look at the numbers and say, well, on your income, using current brackets, you may be dropping into a lower bracket, but that's assuming the tax brackets don't change. And when you look at historical tax brackets in the United States, we're still at historically pretty low tax brackets, which is not the most comforting thing for people to hear. But when you look at the 1950s Eisenhower administration, when your marginal tax brackets got up into the high 90%. Mm-hmm. So it would not be unheard of for us to see higher tax brackets out into the future. So another way to think about Roth conversions is really a hedge against future tax rate increases as well.
Yeah, no, that's great. Hey, folks, stick with us. We're going to be right back with more Stephan Scheidt. This is wonderful.
More expert advice for having a happier relationship with money still to come on the Saving with Steve Show on UK Health Radio.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
When you think boots, you think Ariat. You think comfort from day one and durability to day 1,000. You think steel toes on the job, square toes on the dance floor, with style that owns a Saturday night and still looks sharp enough for Sunday dinner. And through every mile and every moment, you're thinking Ariat boots. Boots that show up, stand out, turn bad ideas into better stories, and still punch the clock come Monday morning. Now, it's time to stop thinking and start shopping. Find your Ariat boots at Ariat.com or a retailer near you.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back to the show that is here to help you achieve your financial goals. It's the Saving with Steve Show. Now here's your host, Steve Sexton, on UK Health Radio.
Hey, welcome back to the Saving with Steve Show. I truly want to thank you for tuning in and appreciate you letting your friends and family and associates know about our show. Again, all the replays are available at savingwithsteve.us. If you're enjoying stories of helpful information, insight on Saving with Steve, then I encourage you to subscribe to our YouTube channel. Never miss a show by checking out a few of our affiliates at UK Health Radio, BBS Radio, Talk Radio in New York City, Las Vegas Network, all these networks dedicated to empowering you to solve problems, uplift your spirit, live a life of personal and financial freedom. With that, we're right back here with Stephan Scheidt. It's Scholar Financial Advising. You can see it right in the screen there. He runs this wonderful firm that has, you know, clients from all over the country. But right now, we want to talk about stress testing retirement plans. Many people don't realize this or realize it too late, where they go, hey, that sounds good, let's go do that. Or they get it in their head, this is the direction they want to go to, and they've never really done some serious stress testing on what their plan is, whether it be taxes, investments, otherwise, on their retirement, and so on. And you know what? It creates problems for them. So let's talk a little bit about the importance of stress testing. what it is, how it works. What would be, you know, you've been around a while, so you've probably seen the implications of people not doing things like that. Yeah. And so if you can, I'm going to kind of give you the floor and just let you talk, because I think it's an important thing for people to understand.
Yeah. So when we think about finance, right, one of the issues that comes up when you're planning for retirement, what we see is that it's really easy to look at something and say, well, I think the stock market has an average 7% return or 8% return. And then they don't look at the fact that they're going to have a portfolio that is also bonds, right? And fixed income, not just stocks. So now their average return, maybe 6%. And then they look, and I see these charts all the time, and our clients typically have a lot of spreadsheets that they're working on and testing their own stuff. And you have this perfect straight line that says, well, I have $1 million and it's going to have a 6% return. So I'm going to be able to spend $60,000, or I've got $10 million and I'm going to be able to spend $600,000 every single year, right, throughout retirement. The problem with that is that it's assuming that the account will always have positive returns of exactly 6%. And I think everyone knows that that's not how the stock market works. Right? The stock market's going to move up and down. So the way you handle that decision of whether or not you should retire is through stress testing and simulation, right? We want to basically embrace randomness. We want to embrace the idea that the market does move up and down. And instead of saying, I'm going to have this perfect straight line that the market's going to return X percent every year, instead we look at it and say, well, what if we start today and what if the market's up next year by 10%? And then what if it drops by 15%? And then it's up by 3%? And then it's down by 8%. And we draw this jagged line all the way out the rest of your life and say, were you able to make it through retirement without running out of money with this jagged line? And then if the answer is yes, you get a nice check mark for it. And then you have to go back and say, well, there was a lot of assumptions that were made of returns, but what if we were wrong and the market's not up next year? It's actually down. But now you have a whole new line that you're drawing. So a good way to handle the base simulation is to run that, you know, 1,000 different times. It's the fancy name for that is called a Monte Carlo simulation. Right? It's basically analysis 1,000 different ways. And you take all of this into account and you have a high, you want to see how many times out of 1,000 you can make it through all these different scenarios without running out of money. So in that scenario, that would be first, right? We want to have a base scenario that we have with all these simulations. And then we start to stress test. And sometimes I joke that that's our job. Our job is to see how far we can push that scenario before it starts to break. And breaking points are important because it starts to tell you where the floors are and ceilings are for spending, for saving, for all of these different scenarios. So common things you want to stress test against is the most risky time of retirement, your first year you retire, right? Because that's your longest time horizon that your account has to work the hardest from that point on. So what's the worst case scenario? You're having your retirement party and next day the market drops 30%. That's the worst case scenario. That's what everyone worries about. So, and rightfully so, because now that scenario has 30% less. You're going to be drawing money from a portfolio that's now smaller, and you don't have time to say, well, let's wait 4 or 5 years. Market's going to recover and then we'll be okay. You're going to be pulling from it anyways. So it's important to stress test against that. How does your portfolio do if that happens? How does it do if you have a cut in Social Security? How does it do if tax rates go up by 5%, 10%? And how does it do with long-term care costs in the future? So we want to have all of these different hits to the portfolio to say, is it still surviving these? And then in times where the stress tests show weakness, then we go back and say, well, how do we mitigate that risk? So the example we just gave, if we look at a stress test that says a 30% drop on your portfolio year one doesn't look so hot, that's not going to do good. So then what can we do? Maybe we focus on building up some liquidity in those years before retirement. We build up some cash. We build up so you have a year or two worth of expenses outside of your accounts. So that way, if the market does drop that amount, well, you can go pull some of that cash, live off that, and give yourself some time for the markets to recover. Do we have a plan in place, almost like an emergency action plan for your portfolio in these type of stress tests? And the stress testing allows you to pull those together and say, it's great to have a strategy for when everything goes great, but what are the scenarios that could go wrong? How bad are they? And how bad could they be for the portfolio? And the ones that are going to actually be bad, how do we mitigate that risk? Or how can we reduce the chance of that being a problem?
See, you know, I was just thinking in my head, it's like, okay, so that's like saying, hey, I have $1 million my first year and the market just went down 30%. I've got 700,000. I have to take out 40,000 because that's my 4%. So now, you know, the market goes up, but I still have to take out that 40,000. So where am I going to be 4 or 5 years down the road? Am I going to be back up to my million? Or am I, you know what, how does that affect me? And like you said, hey, do I have liquidity? What if I have a health issue? You know what? Those things are the things that people need to be thinking about with a portfolio, as opposed to just having a portfolio. Am I right on the same page there with you?
Absolutely. No, I think that's a great way to think about it. And then the other thing is that it's dynamic. It's a dynamic decision-making process in the sense that it's good to plan ahead, but it's also opportunities for if the market drops 30%, do you go rebalance your portfolio? And do you go sell bonds first out of the portfolio so that way your equity percentage becomes higher when the market's lower, which sounds counterintuitive when you look at it, but it's essentially the old buy low, sell high in the market, right? You're rebalancing to add weight into those. So there's a lot of things you can do to mitigate that. What you want to make sure you're doing is planning ahead of time before you make the leap to say, if this were to happen, do I even have an exit door? Right? Is there an even a door that exists that I can go through? Because in some cases, which we've seen, somebody goes and retires and they don't take that into account. So, you know, if you have a bad year, you're going to have major changes to your lifestyle. We're going to have to cut expenses. You're not going to be able to do the traveling that you want to do early in retirement. Because that's the problem, is the 4% rule, everything is great. It'd be hard to argue that it's based on academic literature, right? Back in the 90s. But the issue is that spending is usually non-linear throughout retirement. That what happened? First year retirement, no one says, well, the first year I'm going to retire, my plan is to do nothing. I'm just going to stay home. That's the year of the big trip, right? That's the year of like
the big trip, the remodel, all that kind of stuff.
Exactly, right? It's all the big fun stuff that happens. So your spending is more than 4% the first year, and then it tapers down. So it may average at 4%. But what does that do to the scenario we just told? So now market drops 30%. You're not just pulling your 4%, you're pulling 4% and the remodel and the travel and all of this, or you're not doing any of those things. And all of those things are going to have to be delayed. So that has to be planned for. You have to plan for those types of issues. And unfortunately, you generally retire once, right? So you're retiring one time. So you don't have the experience to look back on and say, well, in the past four times I retired, I learned that I have to keep enough liquidity for the trip or for the remodel ahead of time because I'm not going to be able to get out of that hole. And then that's where the advantage of having a strategy built ahead of time really comes into play.
I just want to share something with one of our, one of our viewers. Basically, he indicated that he basically retired just before 08. And when 08 hit, took everything out of the market, put it in CDs, and basically has pretty much stayed safe. And because he stayed safe, he's now 74 right now and going back to work. And the reason why he's going back to work is because the Social Security income from his wife's portion of the Social Security went away when she passed away. So he's, you know, doing stuff he hasn't done in 10, 12 years just because he, you know, didn't have the right plan, didn't stress test it, didn't know what to do if this were to occur, and didn't have that extra set aside just in case it did occur.
Yeah. And he's in an odd way, he's kind of a lucky one that he was able to go back to work. Right. Because that's the problem with a retirement that was poorly timed. The issue there is that you leave typically at a time where you are at the pinnacle of your earnings years. You're at a position that doesn't have you're at the top of the corporate ladder, so to speak, right? Where those are not common positions that you can just hop back into, right? You leave that position, the company backfills that position, you have gone, and then 2 to 3 years later, you can't just hop into that role again, right? In many cases, that's not how it works. So now you have to hop into a role at a lower income, right? Or are in a different position than you were at before, both from a job responsibility and income perspective. So it's a big decision. There are risks there besides just, I can hop back into work. That's a hard assumption to make.
I'm gonna say he's one of the few lucky ones because if you think about not being in the workplace for 5 or 6 or 7 years, so much has changed. The knowledge that's required in order to do the things that they're just required nowadays are different. The technology's different. Everything sleeps and bounds. So he's just very, very, very lucky. So I just wanted to share that. Now, we're almost done with our time. Stefan, I want to thank you so much for sharing this information today. But you know what? I know you have clients all over the country. If somebody wants to reach out, use your services, how can they get connected with you?
Yeah, the easiest way is our website, scholarfinancialadvising.com. And they can hop on there. We have tons of resources available, blogs, podcasts, newsletters, anything to be able to reach out, connect to us would be great. We'd love to hear from you.
That's wonderful. Hey, folks, we're also going to have that on our website. So if you go to the Saving with Steve US website, you're going to see this episode. This episode's 246, Stefan Scheib. You'll be able to get that information there. You might even have a few extra resources that can help you as well. So, Stefan, I want to thank you so much for being here. Again, Scholar Financial Advising. You're getting a PhD. This is wonderful. So reuse the resource because it's, you know, there's some really some nice things that can come up. So again, thanks for being with us today on Saving with Steve.
You as well. Thanks for having me.
I want to thank Stefan Scheif so much. You really want to go check out his website. You'll see the link on the savingwithsteve.us website. I want to thank you for joining us here on Saving with Steve. I appreciate you letting us, you know, the friends, family, associates know about the show. All the replays are available at savingwithsteve.us. If you enjoy the stories of helpful information, insight on Saving with Steve, then I encourage you to subscribe to our YouTube channel so you never miss a show and check out a few of our affiliates at UK Health Radio, BBS Radio, Talk Radio New York City, E360 TV, Las Vegas TV Networks. All these networks are dedicated to empowering you to solve problems, uplift your spirit, and live a life of personal financial freedom. Hey, you can also follow us on Facebook at Saving with Steve Sexton and the Incubator Club. Again, thank you for being with us. I hope you have a wonderful week right here on Saving with Steve. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
Thank you for joining us on the Saving with Steve Show, hosted by Steve Sexton on UK Health Radio. To learn more about the show and how to become a guest or sponsor, visit savingwithsteve.us. That's savingwithsteve.us. Join us again next time as we continue to talk about everything under the sun that relates to you having a healthier, happier relationship with money. This has been the Saving with Steve Show, hosted by Steve Sexton on UK Health Radio.